Hello, I'm Sarah Volstead. This is number 0206, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0206. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor Robbie Rist has a role in the campy sci-fi phenomenon Sharknado. How did he get the part?
Before Sharknado was a movie, it was a poster. And this guy saw the poster, and he's a big genre fan, as am I. And he was like, oh my God, did you see the Sharknado poster? I'm like, what is Sharknado? He goes, it's a tornado with sharks in it. And my head exploded. And then a little later on, Anthony C. Ferrante, who I've done all this music for, all these movies, said, yeah, you know, I'm kind of in the running for directing Sharknado. And I grabbed him by his lapels, and I said, you must make this movie, and if you must make this movie, I must be in it.
Rufus the Dog, author of The Dogma of Rufus, is on the program. Bet you didn't know dogs could talk human, did you?
Dogs are able to speak human, but we try to keep it a secret because if our humans knew, they would start lying to us just like they do to each other. At the moment, because they don't know, they tell us the truth. So normally I don't talk, but I'm making an exception to promote my book.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He's not too keen on pedicabs.
Well, for one thing, I think the people that bribe them are potential organ donors. The reason for that is, although we haven't had a tremendous number of deaths and injuries, I still think it's kind of dangerous on the streets of New York. But be that as it may, they're licensed. They're entitled to try to make a living. We don't consider them, really competition. But we had an interesting case last week. Everybody talks about how you don't blame the victim when a crime occurs. But sometimes you have to say to the victim, what, are you stupid?
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0206, was Sarah Volstead, who was a reporter at Global News Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Sarah, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And speaking of the other place where I work, just want to mention that I've started a new segment on our Global Montreal newscast that I air on Sundays called What I Learned This Week on the Web. It's basically a Stuff File-like look at some of the interesting news items that float around out there, much like on this show, only in this case, with actual video. Now, it runs, as I said, on Sundays here in Montreal, but I also put it up on my YouTube page and blog, so you can check it out there. The links for the most current one, which is the third one I've done, and you can see the first two if you want to go back on my YouTube page, you can find them there as well. Anyway, the links, you'll find them on the What's On page for this show, which, as I said, is 0206. Anyway, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, a cashier at a Fort Pierce, Florida Walgreens told police that a man approached her with a confession. According to her statement, the man explained that 4 or 5 months earlier, he had been in the store while using street drugs. According to the man, the drugs gave him the ability to become invisible. Yeah, he said he used his powers of invisibility to pass through the counter and take a carton of Cool Brand menthol cigarettes undetected. Now, however, he felt guilty and wanted to pay for the $60 carton of cigarettes. He left his debit card, which, by the way, had a balance of $8 on it, and phone number on the counter and started wandering the aisles of the store. The clerk called the police. However, video surveillance of the alleged crime couldn't be obtained, and the man didn't have any of the smokes left, so no charges were pressed. The man was issued a trespass warning and escorted off the property. I'm guessing, with a stern warning, by the way, that they don't ever want to see him again, which, of course, he claims was his original crime. But I digress. A woman was found naked with her head wedged in a stair railing after trying to spice things up with her man. The 46-year-old from Lepich in Russia was apparently having sex with her boyfriend as her head became stuck. The police were called when a neighbor discovered the naked woman who was unable to free herself from the stairwell. The woman told police that she had been having consensual sex with her partner, who had disappeared by the time officers arrived. Emergency worker Alexei Dotsenko said, "In all my time working as a rescuer, I don't recall an incident like this one." So, the boyfriend just took off, leaving her there, huh? Well, it's official. Chivalry apparently is dead. I think that relationship is pretty much over, too. A U.S. college football player has been charged after he was spotted barking at a police dog. University of Florida linebacker Antonio Morrison was arrested early Sunday on two misdemeanors. According to the Alachua County Sheriff's Office, Morrison walked up to the open window of a police car and barked at a dog named Bear. The dog responded by barking back, prompting an officer to arrest Morrison for interfering with a police canine. He also was charged with resisting arrest. It was the second arrest in little more than a month for the sophomore. Morrison also was arrested on June 16th and accused of punching a bouncer. He received a deferred prosecution on the simple battery charge, a deal in which he was ordered to stay out of trouble for 6 months. Florida head football coach Will Muschamp announced via the team's official Twitter account that Morrison, quote, has been suspended from the team and will miss at least two games to begin the season. So, basically, he's now in the coach's doghouse. How fitting. Life's rough, ain't it? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, this is how empty our collective lives have become, folks. A Pittsburgh man says he's wired his toaster into Twitter so it automatically sends him a tweet when it's toasting every morning. Hans Scharler glued a switch to the outside of his toaster that detects when the slider is down and the toast is on, or when it's up and finished toasting, and connected it to the internet to automatically tweet toasting and done toasting. All he needed was a terminal board, a resistor, and some alligator clips. Scharler set up an event widget that monitors input from his contraption and sends alerts to his Twitter email address when the digital input from his toaster modification was high, toasting, and low, done toasting. Hans Scharler himself has just under 500 Twitter followers. His toaster, however, has more than 2,000 followers. That is a sad commentary, if I've ever heard one. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Actor Robbie Rist is one of the many stars that you'll find in the surprise hit TV movie Sharknado, which has garnered a lot of attention for the Sci-Fi Network, especially online. Robbie joins us on the line right now from California to talk about the film and also some of the other things he's been up to. Hi, Robbie.
Hello, sir. Nice to hear your voice again.
Nice to hear your voice as well. So you've been around for quite a while. I mean, a lot of people know that you were obviously Cousin Oliver way back in the day and on the Brady Bunch, so you've seen a lot of scripts between then and now.
I'm in my 43rd year of being an actor.
Congratulations, sir. Congratulations.
Yes, yeah, I'm still doing it, you know, and I'm not in jail. It's amazing.
Absolutely. So what is it? What is it about this script? When you saw this, what did you say? Yeah, that's the role for me.
Well, actually, I kind of got into it in a roundabout way. I have been doing music for Anthony C. Ferrante's movies up until now. I also did. I wrote and performed six songs for Sharknado, and I was actually talking to another production company back east about 6 months ago or so, and you know, before Sharknado was a movie, it was a poster.
That's kind of how the Asylum sold, you know, how they got their funding, is they made this poster of the shark with the tornado with the sharks in it, and it said, enough said, and this guy saw the poster, and he's a big genre fan, as am I, and he was like, oh my God, did you see the Sharknado poster? I'm like, what is Sharknado? He goes, it's a tornado with sharks in it, and my head exploded. And then a little later on, Anthony C. Ferrante, who I've done all this music for, all these movies, said, yeah, you know, I'm kind of in the running for directing Sharknado. And I grabbed him by his lapels and I said, you must make this movie. And if you must make this movie, I must be in it. So he actually wrote me the part.
Excellent.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, you know, I had no idea all of this was going to happen again. I seem to keep stumbling into things that sort of hit the popular culture. You know, I mean, there's the Brady Bunch thing and the turtle thing and now this. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, we should mention that you were the voice of Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm. Yep, in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. Yeah.
Exactly. So you've had I guess you've had the kind of career that fanboys love.
Yeah, I like I said, I keep stumbling into these things that kind of hit the cultural zeitgeist, you know? I mean, you know, Brady Bunch is now 40 years ago when I did it. And strangely, we're still talking about it. And in these, you know, in these times of information and technology moving so quickly, I mean, 40 years is about 70, 80, 90 lifetimes at this point.
Absolutely. Now, so
at least for something that's popular culture, you know what I mean?
Working on a film like this, it's a situation where technology really is involved in making a movie with post-production, with CGI. So even though you knew what the story was going in and you worked on the film, was it a bit of a surprise seeing the final project?
Oh, completely. I've actually never been involved with, you know, a really big effects film like this. Although, you know, I'm aware of the technology and how it all works, and you know, I teach acting too, and one of the things I tell, you know, fledgling actors is acting is really just playing cowboys and Indians, but you're a grown up. It's like when you're a kid, you know, and your parents get a new appliance like a refrigerator. If you end up with the box, that box becomes a fortress, a castle, a rocket ship, whatever. And the crazy thing about it is at that age, it's not a box. It really is a rocket ship. It really is a castle. It really is. So, so a lot of these new movies, you know, I mean, you're acting to tennis balls all the time.
Wow.
You know, and then, I mean, like, you know, in the scene that I was in, there was no water at all. And there was no water, no sharks, just, you know, just dry land and me attached to some crazy harness. So, I mean, seeing all of the effects that they put in and for the amount of money that they did. You know, the crazy thing about Sharknado is the guy who wrote it didn't want to direct it because he said at the budget that they had, it was impossible to make. Mm. And a few directors went through their office and Anthony was the guy who said, what are you talking about? I can do this. And he delivered huge. I mean, you know, there was actually a bigger audience for it the second showing than the first. So that means by just sheer word of mouth, the thing grew.
Well, that's the interesting thing because social media had a big role to play in the popularity of this film, and it's a double-edged sword because there were some people who were really enjoying the fun that Sharknado was all about, and there were those who were mocking Sharknado, and that in turn turned into appreciation for the film, it seems.
Sure. Well, I think there is, I mean, at the end of the day, Sharknado is a B-movie, and, you know, B-movies are watched for all kinds of reasons. What the great thing I find about B movies usually is that they're usually such high concept ideas that they almost can't pull them off anyway because no one's going to give them any money to do so. So yeah, I think that there's people that appreciate the sort of like high conceptitude. That's a word. Sure it is. You know, the high concept nature of it. Other people just like some of the groany dialogue. You know, they had to do this thing. They shot it in 18 days
and the script was written fairly quickly, and I'm really impressed with what they managed to pull off, considering the budget they had, because I've been in multi-million-dollar studio movies, and Sharknado is truly the little movie that could. I mean, yes, it blew up on social media, but I think it, because of it being in the middle of a summer and, there were a lot of kind of crazy news events going on and a lot of the summer blockbusters weren't doing as well as they could. I think the public was just ready for something that they could all, unite under.
You also used the term a little while ago that you don't hear too much of because the old double features are gone. You used the term B-movie. And yes, this is a classic B-movie, but unfortunately in this day and age, some people, when they hear the term B-movie, they think it's second class, second grade. There are good B-movies. Just because a movie is a B-movie doesn't make it a bad movie.
Complete. Oh, the Evil Dead series. Those are B-movies. They're great movies.
Exactly.
Sure.
So I think people are enjoying Sharknado for exactly what it is.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, it definitely... I was doing an interview last week about it, and one of the things that I love about Sharknado and movies of its ilk is that in three syllables, Sharknado tells you everything you need to know about the movie, where A Trip to the Bountiful doesn't. I mean, Trip to the Bountiful, well, it's a period piece, and it's costumes, and it's shark, it's just like, and it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest titles of a movie ever. Yeah. And, you hear it, and I don't know, look at this way. The movie wasn't even made yet, and I wanted to see it.
Trip to Bountiful, by the way, that's a Hope and Crosby film, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to give anything away for people who haven't seen it. I don't want to be a spoiler here, but I know there's a sequel coming out. Is there any chance, because, you finagled your way into this one, is there any chance you can be in the second one?
Nobody's called me, and my character does die in it, but, as I like to think of myself as a character actor, I'll be the general that, tells everyone not to panic. I'll, whatever, put me in, coach, just let me swing the bat. Mostly what I want to see happen is what happens, I've been watching Anthony Ferrante's career for about 25 years now. We started making, movies with him and stuff like 25 years ago. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with that guy next. I would like to see, now that he's proven he can deliver a hit with no money, I would like to see what happens with somebody throwing some cash at the guy and seeing if he can actually make a thing that has a decent budget.
Robert,
and then because of that, I will then get another job.
Excellent. Robbie, we have about a minute. You've touched on a little bit that you're doing a lot of music. What projects are you working on these days?
Oh, gosh. I'm mostly producing a lot of underground bands. I'm also, I do a night of 70s music once a week. I'm working with a Dead Kennedys tribute band that all dresses up as zombies, and we call ourselves the Undead Kennedys. I'm on Doc McStuffins, which is on Disney Junior, a cartoon. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, just like find me on Facebook. I'm really easy to find.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again, Robbie, for talking to us. It's always a pleasure.
As always, a delight talking to you.
Thank you, sir. You take care.
You too. I'll talk to you soon.
Actor Robbie Rist. Now, there's a guy I always have a lot of time for. He's just one of the coolest dudes you'll ever talk to. He's in Sharknado and is busy with a lot of other projects, as you've just heard.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we have a talking dog and a Gabby Cabby coming your way. Also, a lot more Stuff File news. And, of course, an idiot of the day here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And we have more Stuff File news right here, right now. Jordan Moran, age 25, already had a lengthy criminal record that included convictions for break-ins, possession of stolen property, and probation violations. He was on his way to Simcoe, Ontario, to serve a weekend in jail on an assault conviction, but he didn't make it. Police pulled him over since he was driving a stolen car. In court, to face that charge, Moran told the judge that his mistake was agreeing to serve his 60-day assault sentence intermittently on weekends rather than all at once. I thought it was a good idea at the time, he said. I shouldn't have taken that. It has added stress to me. Well, I made the wrong choice. Yeah, apparently he made the wrong choice again and again and again and again. Anyway, cops in Nebraska thought they had scored a major bust last year during a routine speeding stop. State troopers pulled over Rajesh and Marina Derry of New Jersey. Now, during the stop, one of the troopers asked the Derrys if he could search their vehicle, and they allowed. That was their first mistake, because what they found was a large sum of cash in the trunk. Their story was that they were transporting the money to a friend of theirs, 33-year-old Tara Mishra, who is a stripper in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Mishra was supposedly saving the money over the past 15 years and was planning to open a nightclub in New Jersey with the Darys as her partners. Likely story. Every cop worth his salt knows that any cash larger than the amount needed to buy a burger and fries is certainly something that's considered drug money, probably. So they confiscated it. The troopers took the Darys into custody, and later a canine unit alerted to trace elements of illegal drugs on the cash. By the way, for the record, you know most American money has illegal drugs on it as far as trace is concerned because it's in circulation. But I digress. Well, it took over a year, but a federal judge finally ruled that the government failed to show a substantial connection between drugs and the money, and that the Nebraska State Police must return the money to Mishra. Now, here's the bizarre part. How much money do you think a stripper could make in a night? $100? Two? Maybe even three? How much money could she possibly have saved? Well, apparently, Ms. Mishra, who began putting aside her earnings when she started dancing at age 18, had saved up $1 million, almost exclusively in small bills. The money was packaged in $10,000 bundles tied with hair bands. The best part is the judge ordered the police to reimburse her with interest. Oh, that story is just too delicious for words, but I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, right about now, Mishra will probably be hearing from the IRS. Anyway, moving right along. When Jeffrey John Pollock, age 49, allegedly refused to leave his ex-fiancée's Marathon, Florida house, she called the cops. As police were arresting him on trespassing charges, he asked them to get his briefcase because it had a lot of cash in it. He initially refused to give the briefcase combination to deputies, but once at the jailhouse, he opened the case. Inside, police say they found $9,480 in cash plus marijuana. Pollock was charged with possession of marijuana and introduction of marijuana into a detention facility. The cash was seized for possible forfeiture. Well, at least we know his ex doesn't have it. Yeah. The gourmet lollipop company Lollifile announced its latest flavor in June, breast milk lollipops, 4 for $10. Owner Jason Darling said it's slowly dawned on him that his friends were producing milk so delicious it could turn a screaming, furious child into a docile, contented one. I knew I had to capture that flavor. Well, that should bring in some major memory money, shouldn't it? Yeah. Apprentice Brooklyn, New York tree trimmer David Fleischer, age 21, the son of the company owner, had to be rescued by firefighters in July after he apparently violated the cardinal rule in business by cutting lower branches first until he was stranded at the top of the tree. "He's a good boy," said Izzy Fleischer, his father. "But he is learning." Learning what is what we need to know. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man standing on a highway and wearing a Superman costume in Wasilla, Alaska, was arrested after he was found in possession of heroin, police said. A costumed Patrick Campbell, age 23, of Wasilla, was waving at traffic while standing in the middle of the park's highway Sunday night. A Campbell was found to be in possession of an undisclosed amount of heroin and was arrested. Okay. Wasilla, Alaska is where Sarah Palin hails from. I'm guessing right about now the good citizens of Wasilla are beginning to wonder when the reporting of their wacky residents will ever end. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Rufus the Dog is an accomplished author. His new book is The Dogma of Rufus, a canine guide to eating, sleeping, digging, slobbering, scratching, and surviving with humans. I bet you didn't know dogs could talk, huh? Well, Rufus is on the line with us right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from California. Hi, Rufus.
Hi, Peter.
I bet a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that dogs can talk. Why are you talking to us, Rufus?
Well, dogs are able, in fact, to speak human. But we try to keep it a secret because if our humans knew, they would start lying to us just like they do to each other. But at the moment, because they don't know, they tell us the truth. So normally I don't talk, but I'm making an exception to promote my book, The Dogma of Rufus, which you have to say a few times during the course of an interview.
Okay. So did you learn that from your humans?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did.
Do you prefer, by the way, to refer to humans as human companions or masters?
Oh, I would not use the word masters at all.
Okay.
Companions, maybe. Yes.
Just checking. Now, do you want to mention who your human companions are? Because I understand that in addition to your name on the book, there are a few others.
Yes, there are several members of the Arnstein family, Larry, Zach, and Joey. They were typists. They had the function of typing, not writing. The writing function was mine.
So basically, Larry, Zach, and Joseph were like court stenographers to you.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were.
Okay, so the fact that humans, since they don't know you can talk, and by the way, do Larry, Zach, and Joseph know you can talk?
Peter, let me ask you something. Are you eating anything right now?
No, I'm not.
Well, It would give me a more of a feeling for what's going on where you are. Like maybe you have a Big Mac that you haven't finished, a pizza, sausage and pepperoni, something like that.
No, I haven't eaten for the last few hours. Why?
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Why is that, Rufus?
Well, because I was hoping if you had something, you could send it to me.
Oh,
because
okay.
I will finish it. You know, humans don't get eating. Eating requires total concentration and focus. You can't enjoy eating if you're constantly interrupting it with talking the way humans do. But, you know, okay. So you don't have anything. I'm not sure I believe that, but you're okay.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Rufus. Your book, The Dogma of Rufus, as you said earlier, humans, since they don't know you can talk, won't lie to dogs. Is the stuff contained inside the book the truth that humans have been telling you? Or what exactly is The Dogma of Rufus all about?
Well, it's not so much the truth that humans are telling dogs. It's the truth that we dogs are telling to each other and to humans. You know, we dogs, we have a purpose in life, which is to spread joy into the miserable lives of humans. The humans, you know, a few thousand years ago, they made the huge mistake of killing off their natural predators. And the natural predators, they used to pick off the old, the slow, the weak, and the careless. But then after that, they were left in the gene pool. And Peter, you only have to look around downtown Montreal to see the sad result.
Well, let me add.
Imagine if their natural predators were reintroduced. Imagine downtown Montreal with a few hungry wolves and bears roaming around. The humans wouldn't be yakking away on their cell phones. They'd be looking around alertly for predators.
Well, that's why we have politicians these days, Rufus.
Yes, they are predators, if you know, in their own way.
Let me ask you this, Rufus. Who did you write the book for? Did you write the book for other dogs, or did you write the book for their human companions?
Oh, no, the other dogs, absolutely. The human companions can read it, and they might benefit from it, but it's mainly a book by a dog for dogs.
So therein lies the second revelation of our conversation. I mean, a lot of people are unaware of the fact that dogs can speak. Now you're also saying dogs can read.
Well, they can, but my expectation is that humans will read the book to their dogs. And so the dogs will hear it. But there's also another thing about this book, that it's actually a hardcover edition, which means it is extremely chewable. So a dog can chew this book, not necessarily read it, but chew it.
Since you say humans lie, I have to ask this deeply philosophical question. If you have dictated your book to the three humans who are, as I said earlier, basically your court stenographers,
yeah,
can you be assured that what you said is exactly what they typed?
Well, I'm hoping that they will type what I wrote. I was just telling them what I had to say, and then they promised that they would write it. I hope they did.
Your book has only been out for a short period of time, but I understand it already, the book being The Dogma of Rufus. See there, I'm getting the title in for you one more time.
Oh, thank you.
I understand the book, The Dogma of Rufus, is actually getting some very, very good reviews.
Well, we got one very good review from Publishers Weekly, which I understand is an important site, but I don't know if the humans will look favorably on this book or not.
Why do you say that? You don't seem sure about your own work, Rufus.
Well, I'm sure that dogs will appreciate it. I don't know that humans will. I hope they will. They should. But, you know, there's a lot of things that humans should do that they don't do.
Do you get the feeling that if this book is very, very successful, that you'll just end up with Larry, Zach, and Joseph Arnstein riding on your coattails? Riding on your literal tail?
Well, I welcome that if it comes to pass. But, you know, it's part of the great dog's plan that humans would feed and care for dogs. That's the part of his plan that we all accept. Unfortunately, there was a bad part of his plan, which was cats. I don't know why the great dog created cats, but this is one of the great mysteries.
Yeah, you and me both agree on that one. that and pigeons. The thing about writing a book, even for a dog, authors are always somebody that are sought after. How is writing this book, The Dogma of Rufus, how has this helped you with the ladies, Rufus?
Well, you know, with the ladies... Now you're bringing up this subject, which for humans is a very difficult subject, which is sex. For dogs, it's not difficult. Dogs, we have sex in a natural way because it's a natural thing. We have it outdoors. We have it at any time of day, and we're not embarrassed by having it in the street watched by other dogs. Humans, because they're so screwed up about this, they hide in houses, in dark bedrooms at night, and they only do it by themselves. It's very weird and crazy, but that's, you know, they're so uncomfortable with anything that is natural like that, you know, that they have these problems.
Well, the book is called The Dogma of Rufus, and I thank you very, very much, Rufus, for taking the time to talk with us. I've got to ask one question, since I've never had the opportunity to actually talk to a dog and have the dog respond. I just have to ask this one last question, which is not related to the book. I mean, I know that dogs like to drink out of the toilet, and I'm just curious to know how you feel about the way humans use that facility.
Well... It is the best, the very best source of fresh water because it's constantly being renewed, and you can just, you know, unless you're a very small dog, or unless your human has allowed the top to come down, you are able to refresh yourself constantly in the toilet. Which with the best kind of water. And I've already forgotten what your question was.
Do you mind the way humans use it?
Oh, well, you know, humans have a lot of strange habits about the natural processes. They won't just go out into the street as we do and crouch down and leave what they have. And not only won't they do that, but when we do it, they scoop it up into these bags. And I don't know what happens after that, but we can't sniff it. We can't sniff the other dog's leavings, which would tell us something. It's very odd, but anything natural is alien to humans.
Well, some of the things you can probably learn if we just read The Dogma of Rufus. I thank you very much, Rufus, for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you so much, Peter, for having me. And I just want to shout out to your dog or any other dogs that are out there. You read the book.
Rufus the Dog, author of The Dogma of Rufus, a canine guide for eating, sleeping, digging, slobbering, scratching, and surviving with humans. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0206, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. We've all heard about lawsuits that seek millions or even billions of dollars. But it wasn't until recently that I heard about a trillion-dollar lawsuit. That's right, $1 trillion. An inmate in Arizona has filed a $1 trillion lawsuit over his food. He says his prison food gave him cramps and caused him to lose sleep. Before this lawsuit, he had filed 380 other lawsuits, and every one of them were dismissed. Let's be fair, one prisoner filing that many lawsuits is so ridiculous it's almost laughable. But prisoner lawsuits are very expensive. Earlier this year, it was reported that the state of California alone has spent nearly $200 million just on lawyers for inmate lawsuits over the past 15 years. These criminals may now be behind bars, but they've found a new way to rob us, by filing lawsuits. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And from the streets of New York, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. Live from the beautiful, warm, hot, sweaty streets of New York City, where everybody's sweating, but everybody's happy.
Okay. One of the things I noticed in the news this week, your mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, has been after large drinks, after smokers. Now I understand elevators are the new enemy.
Well, I don't know if it's really an enemy, but he's sort of like the nanny of all nannies. He wants his people in this city to be healthy. And, of course, it's great sport for the media to make fun of him as he comes out with all these different things. But the fact of the matter is, and this is going to shock you and most of your nice fans, that we have the highest life expectancy of any city in North America, any major city in North America, and that includes even Canada. And the reason for that is, and the reason why you don't see very portly people in New York City, is that everybody's walking. You know, we all use public transportation. So his latest idea is, if you're living in an apartment house that has 30, 40, 50 floors, why don't you walk the steps occasionally rather than take the elevator? So immediately the media goes crazy and says, well, how is somebody going to walk 60 flights and all that? He doesn't mean that. You walk 10 of them and then take the elevator the rest of the way. So I, for one, think it's not a bad idea. As a matter of fact, I go out of my way to walk. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but I go out of my way to try to walk at least a mile a day before I start my shift.
Now, you live in an apartment. What floor do you live on?
I live on the 18th floor, and as a matter of fact, we've done that from time to time, especially when the kids were little. It's not a big deal. I mean, you know, if you don't run it, you do it at a nice pace. And, you know, see, people think the only time you use the stairs is when the building's on fire. No, it's okay to use it other times, too.
Okay. Now, I know as a cab driver, you're probably not fond of other paying methods of transportation that might compete with what you do. So tell me about the pedicabs in New York.
Well, for one thing, I think the people that ride them are potential organ donors. And the reason for that is, although we haven't had a tremendous number of deaths and injuries, I still think it's kind of dangerous on the streets of New York. But be that as it may, they're licensed. They're entitled to try to make a living. We don't consider them, really competition. But we had an interesting case last week. Everybody talks about how you don't blame the victim when a crime occurs. But sometimes you have to say to the victim, what are you, stupid? Here's what happened. A Japanese couple, has no bearing, it could have been any kind of, could have been from Yugoslavia, so I'm not picking on the Japanese, get into a pedicab, so it's like a rickshaw, only the guy's pedaling, and goes from Midtown Manhattan to Greenwich Village. When they get to the destination, the pedicab driver says, that'll be $720. The people said, fine, handed him $720. Now they go back to the hotel, and they mention that to the concierge. And he must have said, what, are you stupid? You know, I mean, how could you do that? I mean, you know, you can't say, well, I'm in a foreign country, I don't know the money. I think you ought to know the money. So anyway, the cops are going to try and find the guy. I don't think they're going to, and this guy is going to be out $720. Now, you see, that couldn't have happened in a New York cab, because number one, I'd like to say that we're honest. And number two, you get a receipt for every ride with my number on it. So if you get back to the hotel and you realize you left the Stradivarius in my back seat, you know where you left it. Penny cabs don't give receipts, though.
I get the feeling for $720, this must be the only air-conditioned catered pedicab in the world.
Yeah, well, that's it. For that kind of price, it's good. Now, I'm going to try it later today. The very next Japanese tourist that gets into my cab, I'm going to see if I can pull that stunt. I doubt it.
Meanwhile, earlier you mentioned that the only reason why people will be running up and downstairs in New York, at least what some people think, is if the building's on fire. There's actually a story in the news in New York that deals with a firefighter, and not a good kind of story, is it?
Not really, but I got to tell you something. He's going to get the award in the history of firemen as the dumbest fireman on the face of the earth. Now, this is a regular New York City fireman who's probably getting as pay, you know, maybe $65,000 a year. At the end of the 20 years, he'll get half salary for the rest of his life, and he can sit on the beach in Miami. So it's not a bad deal. What this guy was doing was that he was calling in false alarms on his cell phone. I guess he'd go into a corner of the firehouse, say hello, and he'd call in. Everybody in the firehouse would jump onto their fire trucks and go zooming out. He would stay there, presumably to watch the firehouse, because that's what they do in most firehouses in New York. When they're out on the call, they leave one fireman to kind of stay behind to make sure that nobody goes through the lockers and steals everything. Well, that's exactly what this guy was doing. Every time the fire trucks went out, he would go to the lockers and steal stuff. After a while, the other firemen got wise. I don't know if they beat the heck out of him. Probably wanted to beat the heck out of him. He's lucky that the cops got him before they did. And now he's going to lose his job, lose his pension, lose his career, and go down in history as really Mr. Evil fireman.
Well, not only Mr. Evil, but Mr. Stupid. And by that, I mean, I don't want to condone crime of any kind, because that's just silly. But the fact of the matter is, he's in the firehouse. He's probably going to be alone in the firehouse at some point, just on rotation basis. Why use your cell phone, which is the most easiest way to get tracked, to send cops, to send firefighters out on false alarms?
Well, whoever said that criminals are smart? I mean, if you really analyze it, you know, people build up this whole thing about, you know, people are so clever in their confidence games and robbing banks and all that kind of stuff. Eventually, unless the police are lazy and having donuts and coffee, they catch everybody who does something wrong, as do most wives. So, I mean, they're not clever people. I've met a lot of criminals in my day, both in and out of prison, and they're idiots. And if I've offended the demographics of your show, I'm sorry, but they're idiots.
Yeah, we do have a few members of the audience who are shut in, let's say. Speaking of which, I understand that there is a story about a certain crime boss in your neck of the woods.
Okay, in the United States, we have a series of what's called U.S. attorneys. Doesn't mean that they're a lawyer in the U.S. It means that they're the federal prosecutor for a particular area. So in New York, you'd have it for, let's say, the Manhattan and Bronx, one for Long Island. It's kind of, and that's the federal crimes. Anyway, the U.S. attorney here in New York City announces, I guess it was 2 days ago, that this guy Frank Cali is the new head of the mafia. And I have his picture on the website, Gabby.com, because I think everybody should know who's the new Mr. Big, you know, the new, James Gotti, James Gotti? I even forgot. How long has he been gone?
John Gotti.
You know, John Gotti. See, I'm telling you, you're Mr. Trivia. But anyway, so I'm thinking this is really weird. First of all, if they're announcing that he's the head of the mafia, why isn't he in jail? I mean, you know, like, isn't somebody not doing their job? Because it would seem to me the highest profile job you could possibly have in the mafia would be the head of it. and that would be the guy that the FBI would go against. So, you know, the old story of the police sitting around and having donuts and coffee, I think I would like to extend that to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That what are they doing, sitting around and having donuts and coffee? Now, I want to very quickly add that Peter Anthony Holder had nothing to do with that previous statement, so I don't want the FBI bothering you. And if they should bother you, you call the Mounties.
Okay, I will do that. I understand that there is a great way to get your picture taken on the streets of New York City because there's a photo booth on wheels?
Yeah, I think this is a great idea. You know, we always talk about pestilence and war and famine and bad things and everything. This is a really charming idea, and I hope it gives somebody in your audience the idea to do it. Imagine if you were, let's say, a FedEx truck, okay, or UPS, you know, that kind of a panel truck. What this guy has done is he turned it into like a photo studio, you know, with different backgrounds and a chair to sit on and the camera, the lights and everything. And he drives around, and he'll stop at a certain place, right, kind of like lunchtime where a lot of people are out on the street, and he will invite people to come in and have either a group portrait or just a picture by themselves. Now, we're talking professional studio quality, and they probably get a little folder or something or other, and he charges them. And I think it's a very neat idea, and he seems to be doing very well because, you know, you have the girls that go out to lunch. Oh, what a good chance to have the six of us photographed. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen. One of you should take that idea and run with it.
Well, I was about to ask, I'm surprised you haven't thought of turning the back of your cab into a photo booth.
Well, the reason that I don't do that is that it's illegal and I don't want to lose my license.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Before we let you go, sir, I understand that you, as you always do, you have a celebrity sighting for us?
Yes. Jennifer Aniston, who is filming a movie in Gramercy Park, which is on 23rd Street. And again, like I always say, it's not a big deal to see a celebrity on the streets of New York. I don't want to get people thinking that, wow, I have the ins and the connections. It's just that I'm moving around a lot. Now, I would like to tell you, I mean, and you know I would never kid about it, she is in real life really an ugly girl. Okay? It's all smoke and mirrors and makeup. She is just about one of the ugliest people I have ever seen. As a matter of fact, I yelled out, hey, Jennifer, you are so ugly. Okay? So, I mean, I'm sorry to burst everybody's bubble, but I just got to tell you the truth. No, actually, she's gorgeous in real life.
Well, you know, the one celebrity that everybody in New York wants to see when they get there is Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. That is the celebrity to spot.
And he is gorgeous, but you can see what I look like at Gabby.com.
Exactly. I always thank you for being on the program. People can take a look at your website at Gabby.com. People can send you an email to Peter@Gabby.com. Thank you.
My pleasure, everybody. Have a wonderful one. Bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have an idiot of the day coming up in just a matter of moments, but one more Stuff File news story for you before we get there. You've heard the old saying, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Well, how about a bat? Apparently, that doesn't work too well either. Just ask 22-year-old Derek Mosley. Sheriff's deputies say Mosley walked into discount gun sales on Southwest Beaverton Hillside Highway in Oregon around 4 p.m. Thursday with a bat in hand and smashed a display case. But they say when Mosley tried to steal a gun, the store manager simply pulled out one of his own personal firearms and pointed it straight at the would-be robber. The manager then yelled some orders at the guy and got him to drop the baseball bat, the gun he had tried to take, and a 9-inch long knife that he had on him. When sheriff's deputies arrived, they found Mosley on the floor being held at gunpoint by the manager. They handcuffed Mosley on the spot and took him into custody on charges of first-degree robbery, first-degree theft, unlawful possession of a firearm, and second-degree criminal mischief. Bail was set at $250,000. You know, in prison, other inmates will ask him what he's in for, and when he tells them, they're just going to laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. I could have very easily made him the idiot of the day, but I didn't. But this next person is this week's Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A 29-year-old Lake Worth, Florida man was arrested after police say he crashed his car with his son in the backseat after he tried to flee an officer. Alexander Webster was arrested at about 8 p.m. on charges of fleeing from an officer and child neglect. He was released from the Palm Beach County Jail 24 hours later after he posted $12,000 bail. A village officer was parked when he saw the silver Chevy that failed to stop at an intersection. The officer followed the car. The vehicle then cut through three lanes of traffic to get away from the officer. The driver then lost control and crashed into a hedgerow. Webster tried to flee on foot, but the officer got out of his car and drew his pistol at Webster, ordering him to the ground. Webster told the officer his six-year-old son was in the back seat. After his arrest, Webster told officers he fled because he thought his driver's license was suspended. You know, when I share these stories usually, it always seems that the driver's license is suspended. But here's the kicker. When police ran his license through the computer, they learned it was valid! Yeah. Now, why would someone try to elude police and leave their six-year-old child in the back of their car because they thought their license was invalid when in fact it was perfectly fine? Well, one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0206. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0206. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.